I'm sorry, but you can't listen to this show because we're full. We can only take a certain number of people listening to this show at once on this server that I got from Radio Shack just before they went out of business. So, Excuse me? What was that? Oh, we do have some openings. You can stay here. You can listen. We do have some openings.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, you got in just in time. Congratulations.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. We thought of other titles for this show besides Ron Van Dam Show. Best we could come up with was A Barrel Full of Pants, but didn't seem to work.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
I don't know, a barrel full of pants actually works pretty well for me. But let's move on. Let's move on. Hi, how are you? Good. Don't answer because I can't hear you. As much as many people think that that Alexa thing and that Google thing that you have in your house where you ask it questions and tells you the weather, it plays whatever music you want, you can they can even connect you by phone to certain people. A lot of people think that that hardware actually is listening to you all the time and is actually recording everything you say in your room, whether you address that Alexa Google thing or not. I did some research on that, and as a result, I can tell you, I have no idea. I don't know. That's one of those things that the internet is not really too good at. It gives you various opinions, and it doesn't really definitive. It's not like going to an encyclopedia where they wrote down lies and misconceptions like decades ago. It's hard for me to say misconceptions, apparently. When I was younger, we had books. Let me explain what these things are. They have covers, and in between, there are pages, and people write stuff in between, and you sit down and you read them. They're called books. There aren't a lot of them around anymore, unless there's a lot of pictures. But other than that, you know. But they were called books. Things have changed drastically. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Things have changed drastically. I'm getting older. So are you. Even if you're 5 years old, first of all, if you're 5 years old, you should not be listening to this show. Secondly, if you are 5 years old, you're getting older too. You're going to be six soon. So we're all getting older, okay? So let's stop this thing. Let's just cut this out. So I'm in the bathroom yesterday. Don't worry about it. It's not going to get really slimy kind of conversation. Just hold on. Let me finish. I'm in the bathroom yesterday, and I want to wash my face. Who does that? I'm looking at the sink, and for a split second, I don't know which faucet knob is hot and which one is cold. Now, I've been around this planet for quite some time, and I kind of automatically just do it. I know where the hot is, and I know the other side is the cold, and vice versa. But for a split second, I didn't know. And the reason that I didn't know was they're not labeled. Now, when I was growing up, back in 1627, I was very close with the Pilgrims. We had had a lot in common. Not as much as you think. We just dressed the same. But everybody did back then. Anyway, so But back when I was growing up, on the handles of the faucets themselves, there was either the letter C for kumquat, or there was the letter H. So you knew that H was hot, C was cold, seriously. But it was, the letters were in the middle of the faucet knobs. They weren't big, bold C's and H's, but they were there. Or there was a little blue, like stone kind of dot for cold and a little red stone kind of dot for hot. There was some way to delineate between the two faucets. Now, the assumption is that we all have this mental intelligence to the point where we don't need these things labeled at all. Well, let me tell you something. Sometimes you do. When there's a choice of two things, sometimes you need to delineate between the two. Now, you don't have to put a label on the flush valve on a toilet because you got no choice. Although, these days, because you have automatic flush toilets, there are little sensor eyes in the toilets themselves, and when you get up, they automatically flush. Whoa! When I go into a public bathroom and I get up from the toilet or walk away from the urinal, I'm not sure whether it's going to do what's on its own or whether I have to push something. And I sometimes look around the urinal or the toilet for a little button or something. So I'm looking pretty stupid. Nothing makes you look more stupid than searching for a button on a toilet. I mean, Well, there's no flush valve. What the hell do I do? I'll just leave it there. Someone will come in later and take care of it. It's not my bathroom. I don't care. True. It's true. Things are just a little more confusing because they're a little too... Yeah. I have a friend who wanted to get that Roomba vacuum cleaner, and I've talked about that before because I don't understand it. And I'm thinking of buying one just so I can try it and then return it. But I feel dirty when I do that. I feel very dirty. I feel bad going to a store, purchasing something, using it, testing it out and using it, and with the full knowledge that it's going to go back to the store in 3 or 4 days. Actually, I have up to 30 days to return it. I could really do a nice cleaning job on my rug if I wanted to and then return the vacuum cleaner. But it's not right to do, is it? Or is it? Well, it's not right to do. It really isn't. There was a time, there's a store called Best Buy. I think they're all over the country. And when the Super Bowl was coming up, people used to buy large screen TVs, bring them home, watch the Super Bowl, have a Super Bowl party, pack up the large screen TV, bring it back to Best Buy within 30 days, and that would be fine. Then Best Buy decided that, well, I think we're being taken advantage of here. We seem to be moving a lot of TVs just before the Super Bowl, and we seem to be getting a lot of returns of them right after the Super Bowl. What's going on here? So I think they figured it out. So what they did was they invoked a restocking charge. So if you did that, you'd be paying heavily to watch that Super Bowl game. So, and also, of course, they have to repack the TV, and then they can only sell it for less, and all that, you know, that's their problem. They kind of figured it out, but that was about the only product that they did figure out. Everything else you can just kind of buy. It's like renting it for free. The only hassle is you have to bring it home and bring it back. Now, I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying. Let's move on before I get into trouble. And let me just assure you, that's wrong to do. It's in the Ten Commandments, in the Bible. Thou shalt not purchase an item, use it, and return it. That knowingly, that's very important, knowingly. That's the 11th commandment, but for some reason, never made it into the top 10. Oh, God. Oh, my goodness. There's some controversy going on in the White House. No. This time it's not with him. It's with his wife. It's Melania Magonola, whatever her name is, Melanoma, what's her name? Marnie Moses, I don't know her name. She's just, I don't know. I get confused between Ivanka, Ivana, Makana, Milana, Milona. I don't understand that family. Anyway, she's the first lady. I think she's the first lady to be imported from another country as arm candy, but first lady, So anyway, so her major job is to decorate the White House. At first, her major job was to go out throughout the country and denounce bullying, and then she realized, well, that's not working for me because I'm married to the kingpin of bullying and threats and childishness. Seems a little odd that I would go out and preach not to bully, so enough of that crap. So Melania just kept quiet. Her major function now, apparently, is to decorate the White House. That's what they do, which is very sexist, but that's what they do. They decorate the White House. They walk down the hallways, and people take pictures of the First Lady as she's decorating. She doesn't decorate herself. She just stands there with a clipboard and with a pencil behind her ear, and it's actually very hot looking. What she did was they took about 40 huge, large, perfectly pruned Christmas trees. I think they're artificial, I'm not sure. But the color of these Christmas trees, they're not green, they're cranberry red. And they line the vestibules and the hallways of the White House. It's fairly attractive, but a lot of the critics have been saying, why are you doing blood red Christmas trees in the White House? Is this like a communistic kind of a statement, or is it blood red? I mean, what is this? And Melania responds by saying, well, I just find it very attractive. She says, everybody's got different tastes. I find cranberry blood red to be a fantastic color. And she says, and I invite you all to the White House to take a look at all these trees. There's controversy and a lot of criticism. Look, I don't care what color the trees are, to be honest with you. I've got far better things to do, like brush my teeth. What I do object to is this. It's the opulence. It's the opulence of the Trump family. The gold lamé chairs, the exquisite importations from the finest in European craftsmanship, that has been, that is as expensive as it can be. Gold everywhere, and opulence of the creepiest type. This is the way this man lived, this Trump guy. He was brought up in opulence and continued the opulence kind of thing. Gets into the White House. The White House is opulent as it is. I don't like opulence, and you know why? Because it shoves it in the face of people that don't have it. And the people's house, the White House is supposed to be called the people's house. It's your house. You can't get in it without clearance, but it's your house. Similar to your real own house. I object to the opulence of it. I object to that. I find it to be, again, very much in your face. This is what I have, and you can't have it. And you pay taxes, so you're going to pay for the opulence of the leader's abode, even though you can't pay for your own. I find it a smack in the face. It's like someone taking a gold statue and shoving it up your nose and saying, "Smell this, sucker." I don't care for that. I think the White House should be decorated in a very understated, very middle-class kind of way. If you have a lot of money and you like opulence, do it behind closed doors in your house, in your mansion somewhere, with the big fence around it so no one can see it or have it shoved in their face. Don't shove it in my face on national TV and say this is the people's house and I'm taking all your tax dollars, or at least a good chunk of them, and I'm going to decorate it to make you see how much you can't have, how you will never decorate like this or live in a house like this or have the money that we have. That's a bad message. Everything out of that White House is a bad message. So that's what I object to. I don't know how you feel about it, but of course, that's up to you. Am I acting really grumpy today?
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
So the President of the United States, this Donald Trump guy, and enjoy him while you can, because he's not going to be president much longer. Either he'll be impeached, removed, certainly by 2020. That'll be the end of him. And if not, not only will I be surprised, but I'll get a T-shirt that says on the front of it, watch out, here I come, Luxembourg. Why I would live in Luxembourg, I have no idea. But I've tried to make this country better, and if you're not going to listen to me, then what am I going to do? Donald Trump has stated very recently that he doesn't read, he doesn't listen to intelligence reports, he doesn't listen to other people. He said, I don't use my brain, I use my gut. Well, the way you eat, Don, I get that. But you're scaring the hell out of me when you make comments like that, that you don't listen to other people's opinions at all, not even your aides and the people that you bring in. You lead by feelings. And they're not feelings of love. And they're not feelings of empathy or sympathy. They are it's gas. You're leading by gas pains is what you're doing. And that concerns me greatly. Don is a very angry man who has never been through anger management, doesn't even know what it is, has said so many times that he never apologizes for anything because that's a sign of weakness. What the hell did you do voting this guy in? I know there were no other choices. I get it. I get it. Who knew? Who knew? Now we know. Let's not just sit here with our arms folded in our lap saying, isn't he crazy and nuts? Come on, man. All right, now, I'm sorry. Sometimes I get too political because there's no other way to look at it. President also states continually that the press, the media, is the enemy of the people. That is so dictator-like, I can't believe it. That's what they do. Trump also wants to start a state-run media source. State-run media. Do you know you can't get any closer to dictatorship than that? But he really wants to. He feels that CNN is the only world communication media network, and he wants to stop that and put out his own state-run media that goes to the rest of the world so they only hear what Don wants them to hear. If you're not scared by this, then you don't understand. You don't understand. And just the statement, the constant statement and drilling into one's head that the media is the enemy of the people, everything that Donald says to you, turn it around. He is everything that he accuses everybody else of being. Take a look, listen to what he says, turn it on him, and you'll say, oh, Ron, you got a point there. I'm not here to make points. I'm here to make money. This is what I do for a living. So thank you. All right. We're going to talk about fake news. like 10 years ago, the term fake news was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean fake news? Is that when you read the news with those plastic glasses and the big nose and the bushy mustache? Is that fake news? No, Donald Trump has started on a campaign to turn things inside out so that everything that you believe that may be factual is not factual, but everything he says is factual. Everybody else is fake news. What he says is actual news. Again, turn it around and you'll say, there are actually, we could talk about that all day. And I think the internet has kind of, the only fake news before the internet was the National Enquirer. And we all knew that was fake. That was pretty much it. It was kind of simple back then. Those of you who are millennials or whatever you call yourselves, you may not realize that there was a simpler time. This wasn't always like this. Then the internet comes around and it starts sparking conspiracy theories and things that aren't true just to get a rise out of people and just to change people's mind, to manipulate them, throw out ideas, but stating that it is truth. And that's when it started fucking people up. That's where they go, wait a minute. I don't know if anybody says anything, whether it's true or not. I don't even know. Yeah, nice, very nice, very nice for our stability. Very nice. When is this second coming happening? I mean, I don't understand what that is. I'm not real religious. There's supposed to be someone that comes down from a mountaintop with a couple of goats and with a halo over their head and walks down to the bottom and says, I've come here to lead you out of the stupidity of your civilization. I am going to issue and grant you peace and bring us all together in the happiest rainbow world I can possibly think of. Come follow me. And everybody goes, oh, wow, finally. Didn't expect this Trump guy to come along and say, hey, that person coming out of the mountain? No, that's me. And sorry, but this is about it. Ooh. So in Washington, D.C., there is actually a museum called the Newseum. It's not new, but it's about news. It's about the news through the years, through our civilization, and current news as well. And they've got an exhibit now that deals with fake news, which is something we've all been talking about for quite some time, unfortunately, and I hope someday that question is resolved. So we're going to go to Washington right now, and we're going to check it out.
Hi, Ron.
Hey,
Barbara McCormick.
Hi, Barbara. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks, and yourself?
Great. Barbara McCormick joins us. She is Vice President of Education at the Newseum. We talk to them on a regular basis as they have different offerings. And the Newseum is in Washington, D.C. It's one of the premier locations for visitation. It's fantastic. Myself being in the news media, I find it especially fascinating. So I understand that there is an exhibit right now that is quite topical.
We have lots of great topical exhibits right now.
I know.
But if you're talking about our exhibit kind of on the digital disruption and that impact on fake news and the media, yeah, we do. It's a very popular exhibit. It's an issue that's kind of facing us all right now that we're trying to learn how to deal with.
Do you find that most people that descend upon a Newseum understand what's going on, or do they walk in saying, I never knew that before? In other words, how up to things do you think the visitors actually are?
I have to say we probably have the smartest visitors in
town.
There you
go.
we attract very smart people. But everyone who comes here walks away learning something and with that aha moment.
Yeah.
And we're definitely hoping they walk away, with some an appreciation of the role that a free press plays in our democracy. So if we can have them walk away understanding that, then I think we've done our job. And if they walk out of here not understanding that, I'd be very surprised.
Yes. Also, they should be Well, deported. Anyway, well, I mean it. I mean, that is the backbone of democracy is free speech, and I don't know. I don't understand why that's even being discussed. But to be honest with you, the museum is an incredible place. Tell me about some of the other exhibits that are going on there.
Can I go back up there, Ron?
Yes.
One of the essentials that you were talking about with free speech, agree 100%, but with that is media literacy. We really think that providing training, which I really work on here at the museum, to strengthen civil society by teaching the First Amendment,
yes,
valuing those First Amendment principles, but along with media literacy, you know, these are the essential foundations, fundamentals behind our healthy democracy. And we really can't have these high-stakes conversations about these social issues that impact us all,
right,
if we can't agree on the same facts, if we can't even start with
Correct.
That basic understanding. So it's really important right now.
Yeah, I mean, before this current administration, I didn't even know that the truth had two sides to it. I thought the truth was the truth, but apparently, and it's not only that, it's also social media and the internet, as wonderful as it is, has questioned everything that we knew was true and proper. So it is a confusing time, and I'm glad this exhibit actually brings that to light so people don't think that everything that they hear is gospel, because it's not.
Absolutely. And we know that this is not new. This has been happening
sure.
since we've been sharing information.
Sure.
But those platforms can make it tougher, you know, and easier to share information. And algorithms can make sure we get information that to the people we know are going to be incensed by or provoked by the content. The purveyors of propaganda know exactly
Correct.
Who, you know, they're targeting with this information.
Correct. And we have to be smarter than they are. And we are, actually, if you just stop and think about it. Anyway, the other, that's not the only thing at the museum. I mean, it is an entire plethora of various news times and news related things, which is pretty much everything. Tell me about some of the other exhibits.
Well, I'd like to just make a mention of one
sure.
of our new exhibits
sure.
coming in March.
Yeah.
Stonewall and the LGBTQ rights movement. Really kind of excited about that exhibit launching, opening in March. We think it's going to be interesting for visitors of all ages, and it's the first of its kind. So we're very proud of that. In addition, in June, we're going to get funny, and seriously funny, and we're going to open an exhibit around John Stewart's death.
Oh,
so we think
yeah.
that's going to be fun. And, you know, at the museum, we like to balance the serious, the thought-provoking with some fun exhibits, some good stuff to
sure.
help people laugh while they're here
yeah.
and have a good time,
yeah,
especially
yeah,
students. Time. You know, we serve lots of student groups here
mm-hmm.
in this time of year, and especially in the spring, so we know that they'll enjoy those exhibits.
Yeah. How long does an exhibit typically stay on the floor there?
Oh, they vary. They can be from 3 months to a year,
uh-huh.
But yeah, they really do vary depending on agreements.
Okay. So certainly once you visit the museum, that's not the end of it. I mean, you wait another year and you're in a whole different place sometimes.
Oh, yeah, we have daily exhibits that change. Exactly. We have a crew in here every day. Two exhibits, our front pages outside and upstairs. So I don't know too many other museums who change exhibits daily, but we're not afraid to do that kind of stuff here at the museum.
Wow.
We keep it interesting. We have some of our great anchor exhibits that are always here, are tried and true, which are favorites, but we do keep it fresh.
You change your exhibits more than I change my pants. That's that's.
I mean, let's not tell anyone about that.
Well, we don't know if that's a lot or not, actually, do we?
is there
any possibility that in the future that the museum might open branches in other parts of the country?
I don't know of any inner workings on that. But we sure are reaching the world
yeah.
with museumed.org.
Yeah.
We have registered users from 174
wow.
countries.
Wow.
When I leave here this afternoon, I'm off to Paris for some programming. Wow. And Saturday doing workshops in Ukraine. Wow. So our content is worldwide, and we're getting there digitally.
Well, news and information is the backbone of democracy, so I don't know what could be more important or more interesting than taking a visit to the museum. Once again, how do we get more information about that?
You can visit museum.org. Everything you need is there. If not, you can always call one of our fabulous bookers here, and they can help you out as well. But museum.org.
Fantastic. And if there's a school in your area or some type of interest group that would like to set something up, I'm sure that they would they'd love to have you there. So that's another way of educating both adults and children as to what's really happening. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Barbara, it's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you, Ron. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's it for me today. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.